Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening.
Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, Art on a Journey, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and the Ypsilanti Food Co-op.
Colorful and Festive Times, read by Denise Shearer, Ground Cover Vendor Number 485. November and December are very beautiful and colorful months. In November, the color of the trees is so pretty. In November and December, people's houses and offices are decorated so colorful and pretty. These 2 months are beautiful and colorful when you're inside and when you're outside. Everywhere reminds me of Las Vegas with the colors and lights. It is a beautiful time to be with people you love, your friends and family. It is also a good time to window shop and just take walks and look at things, even if you can't afford to buy them. It is a good time to go to art museums and libraries and cook delicious meals on a budget. One good meal I can think of is rice pudding. Another good meal is Chex Mix. You can also make spaghetti that tastes like pizza. Those are a few delicious meals on a budget. It's fun to do artwork in December and November, even though I do it all year round. This is an interview with me and Jesse Avro, Ground Cover volunteer and board member. Denise Shearer asked, what do you like about the months November and December? Jesse answered, I like that it feels like most people are slowing down and taking time to be with family and close friends. Denise Shearer asked, what do you think about Christmas and fall decorations? Jesse answered, I like the special colorful lights that people will hang up outside their home. Inside my home, I put together an altar with family and friends who have passed on that I want to remember during this time of year. This is a type of memorial I set up that looks festive like a decoration.
Gratitude by Ken Parks, Ground Cover Vendor 490. When we ponder reality, we may discover that we have choices. What is the best way to become reality-focused? Cynicism is a common choice, but not a happy one. Nihilism is the mother of cynicism, and all forms of nothing matters. The realization that all actions have results introduces us to the truth of karma. Books have been written about this, and Google can be helpful. What attitude gives us the best approach to experience the fullness of reality? If you have tried different approaches, you may have already discovered that gratitude is the best attitude to open the vastness of reality and participate creatively in all the choices available. If you have learned anything in your studies so far, you know that life is a huge classroom and surprises arise. The best teachers of humanity include Buddha, Jesus, Marx, Einstein, and others in a long line of brilliant realized beings. When things don't turn out as planned, you have to look at your assumptions and even change them for a new one. I think every authentic tradition begins with appreciation for this precious human birth. What is the best way to use this opportunity? To fully realize our potential is a quest of a lifetime. What if you choose to be a fully awakened being with unconditional love for all beings without exception? Buddha and Jesus were in agreement that this was the most worthy choice of all. If your gratitude for this precious human birth is genuinely heartfelt, you will naturally find teachers who are lineage holders of enlightened traditions. I had the honor of attending the presentation of James Vukelich during Indigenous Heritage Month. His well-prepared presentation with great graphics was on the seventh generation and the seven teachings of the grandfathers. Thanksgiving of 2016 at Standing Rock was an expression of the seventh generation rising up to stop the Keystone Pipeline going under the Missouri River on unceded land of the Standing Rock Nation. There are many offers of programs that promise to take you to success and prosperity. The marketplace is full. Sincere students of reality will learn that all appearances are impermanent, that change is always happening. You do not have to be perfect to appreciate these basic truths. But serious students will soon learn that all actions have results and the karmic accumulation we all carry is a mix of good and bad that goes back to beginningless time. Attachment to anything will burn us out and even backfire as our efforts to determine the results we want run into endless obstacles. There may be times we get in the flow and our work is fruitful. However, you may have noticed we are not able to cure all the suffering of this world. We may have the intention to cure suffering, but not the skillful means. It is good to keep your intention pure and simultaneously notice how habitual patterns sabotage your intention. It becomes apparent that the compliance culture and its bureaucracy continue the genocide that is endemic in global relations. Taxes and waste grow a war system that is out of control. We need to take another look at our everyday life. Who benefits from your labor? If you read the article from Hamburg, Germany, in the October 31st ground cover, you will learn much about the wealth gap and the need to tax the rich. Quite a good article. I want to look at wealth as it is being created and begin sharing the wealth there. Gratitude for our creative labor of body, speech, and mind is a great asset. An analysis of who contributed is necessary to begin equitable distribution. Some priority would go to those who were the most essential in the creation process. The work of people who produce and care for children would get the first share. Workers of the future need to be nurtured, and so education would be at the head of the line. We need lots of discussion because we are not used to thinking about proper distribution of wealth. Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels wrote extensively on this theme, and we should pick up from that lineage. They are the source of quote, from each according to their ability, to each according to their contribution, which evolved to from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. It will be interesting to pursue this in our everyday life. Contract negotiations will take on a new dimension. General strikes will make the point about the importance of labor. We have much to learn about participatory life. We are fortunate to be in the era of history when it is possible to look at freedom in the context of liberated labor. Our gratitude for the creativity we embody will bring liberty and justice for all. We know these words and use them smugly as if we have arrived when the journey is just beginning. Take a breath and start fresh.
Panhandlers versus Street Vendors, written by Mike Jones, Vendor 113. There are many hustles in the streets of America when it comes to low-income and unhoused people. In the streets of Washtenaw County, you might see unhoused panhandling or selling ground cover news to make money. People think panhandling and selling newspapers are the same thing, but they're not. There are a lot of differences between the two street hustles. I thought the same way when I first started selling ground cover news, but soon I became educated by reading the publication. I learned quickly that I was involved in something much more than making a few bucks. I read an article written by ground cover writer and vendor Will Shakespeare on Ida B. Wells titled Anti-Lynch Crusader. Then I came to learn about Frederick Douglass, an American abolitionist, and how they both use publications like street newspapers to bring awareness and make change during turbulent times in American history. A panhandler is like a rebel without a cause, whereas a street newspaper vendor is representing a cause whether he or she knows it or not. The main purpose of a street newspaper is to provide employment for the homeless and the low-income individuals and to bring awareness to homelessness, poverty, and social justice. Most panhandlers panhandle for their immediate wants and needs. Some panhandlers plead in the name of food, knowing damn well they're going to get some crack, drugs. Don't get me wrong, this is not always the case because some panhandlers have good intentions and mean well. Unlike the street newspaper vendor, the panhandler doesn't have to put money into making money. A newspaper vendor has to pay for the newspaper he or she sells. At Ground Cover News, the vendor pays 50 cents per newspaper and then resells the newspaper for $2, making $1.50 profit. Another difference is accountability. The street panhandler has nothing and no one to account to, whereas the newspaper vendor has not only the street newspaper as an organization to account to, but also his fellow vendors. What most people don't know that street newspaper vendors are independent contractors who provide valuable information to the community by being a part of the production, writing, and photos, and newspaper sales. Ground Cover News provides the unhoused and those in poverty a platform for their voices and support in Washtenaw County through the publication itself and through social and civil engagements, whereas vendors can voice their opinion and concerns in civil and public matters that concern unhoused and low-income communities. Before Ground Cover News, when I was unhoused and addicted to drugs and alcohol, I used to panhandle to get what I felt I needed, like food, alcohol, and drugs. As I grew as a man, I got off drugs and alcohol and got a job. I began to regain a sense of pride. I didn't want to have to ask others for food, clothing, and shelter. It's in our nature to be independent. As parents, we have watched many times our children seek their independence. They don't want to hold our hands when crossing the street, or they want to zip up their own coat. It's normal to seek independence. There are a lot of unhoused individuals who suffer and have been diagnosed with mental illness. Some unhoused mental ill individuals are on drugs, furthering the problem of mental illness and their unhoused status. I've been asked several times while selling ground cover news by customers, how do I know who to give money to? Because I don't want to give money to someone who is going to buy drugs with that money. I always tell them to seek conversation with the unhoused and learn their story. A lot of the unhoused and those with mental illness have fewer little friends. Friendship goes a long way in the unhoused community. Make a friend, assess their needs, and offer aid and assistance where you see fit. I myself give to people regularly because I know their story. I've been involved in the unhoused community for over 20 years, and I learned that by communicating, one can gain a better picture of the unhoused community and the individual whom you recently met. Support street newspaper vendors and the unhoused community. Happy holidays.
Ann Arbor for Public Power Ballot Initiative, All Power to the People, an article by Jim Clark, ground cover vendor number 139. Some people would say Detroit Edison, DTE, is unclean, unreliable, and unaffordable. The members of A2P2, Ann Arbor for Public Power, share that sentiment. Ann Arbor for Public Power is a group of neighbors who decided they were fed up with the abuse of big power on the environment and the community. In November 2026, A2P2 plans to take the first step in taking power back from DTE and put control of energy in the hands of the people who depend on it. I interviewed Brian Geringer, the executive director of A2P2, to learn more about the organization and their ballot initiative. If passed, the initiative will establish a board of directors that will begin the process of taking over the management of Ann Arbor's electricity supply. Tell me about A2P2, I asked. Ann Arbor for Public Power is an org that started in 2020 with the purpose of getting rid of DTE entirely, Brian stated. The first thing the organizers looked at was the City of Ann Arbor's A20 Plan for Sustainability, which is a 10-year plan to produce net zero emissions from electricity by 2030. What they found is that most of the electricity emissions, most of Ann Arbor's electricity, is from Detroit Edison. So in order for Ann Arbor to be net zero on electricity, we have to be free from DTE. Brian went on to say that the organizers decided to exercise the rights given in the state constitution to take ownership of the electricity. Notable members and supporters of A2P2, such as Jeff Irwin, Yusuf Rabi, and Michelle Dietrich, agree that having Ann Arbor run its own electricity, the same way it runs its own water, can help achieve 100% renewable energy. I did a little bit of research on how power is generated, I said. What I'm not clear on, though, is doesn't DTE own all the infrastructure, like the machines that make the electricity and the wires that transport it? Good question, Brian replied. It's very weird. DTE does energy generation mostly on the east side of the state, and then also does distribution. Those are two separate entities. There's also actually a go-between, the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator. This is what we call the grid. MISO is a nonprofit that manages electricity transmissions across large regions. Then I wanted to know, what if somebody bought a farm and put windmills on it for the purpose of generating electricity for a small town like Dexter or Chelsea? Brian answered, well, if they did it for Dexter, they would have to sell it to DTE, and then DTE would sell it back to them because of their infrastructure. Or they can create their own internal city-generated electricity, like Ann Arbor did with the Sustainable Energy Utility, which allows residents to produce and consume energy generated by solar panels and battery storage systems within the city. If it was done in Chelsea, it would be a different situation because Chelsea actually has a municipal electricity utility. Couldn't the Dexter Solar Wind Farm install their own poles and wires, I asked? Yes, the city would allow the farm to have that power, Brian replied, It is prohibitively expensive, but the city can force DTE to sell their poles and wires. That is in the state constitution. How would they do that, I asked. Brian answered, it requires a 60% vote. The city would take out basically a giant loan in the form of a bond. They would buy all the poles and wires, then that big loan would be paid back through people's actual electric bills over 30 years. Brian expanded on the larger vision of the community-supplied electricity. There's also a huge benefit in decentralization of energy generation. If the whole Southeast Michigan region relies on five major power plants, then big chunks of it or the whole thing can go down if only a few key places fail. But if every neighbor has a solar array and a mini windmill, then if your neighborhood goes out, you can come to my house. If mine goes out, I can go to your house because they're independent from each other. And properly networked, you could have half of it go out, but be able to share electricity from all the other active resources. Brian continued, I think that the different municipalities could coordinate. There are some things about electricity that benefit from greater coordination for sure, like how to put in substations and that sort of thing. So I assume they would coordinate. And I should say it could also be coordinated at a statewide level or at a national level. It sounds like you're talking about rendering DTE obsolete by creating power on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis, I asked. Yes, Brian said with emphasis. Is that what the ballot initiative is about? Yes, Brian answered. In 2026, A2P2 is running a ballot initiative that will be voted on in the November election. It will create a democratic hybrid board of the future public electric utility. We want to make sure that future public power is run with at least some democratic control. So in 2026, if we're successful in passing the ballot initiative, the city will begin the process of creating that board. Then in 2028, every ward will elect one person to the public electric board, and the city council would appoint four people. Finally, a 9-person public power board would be created in 2028 that would gear up the city to actually take over electricity production. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be very exciting. We talk about housing and how housing should be free. But housing isn't much without power, so shouldn't power be free as well? I asked. I told someone one time that I thought electricity was a human right. Brian agreed. Then I said, as an environmentalist, I reconciled the need for electricity a long time ago because a basic human need is heat. If you're in temperature that causes hypothermia, you can only go 3 hours without proper heat. So in the wintertime, you have to have a fuel source. We used to burn wood, but with modern technology, we can harness heat from the sun and spit it out through a space heater. Electricity keeps our hot food hot and our cold food cold. Brian added, and not having AC can be life-threatening in Phoenix. Not to mention there's tons of people who rely on electricity to stay alive through health aid machines. According to reporting by Crane's Detroit Business, DTE and Consumers Energy faced heightened scrutiny after widespread outages in 2023. This is no surprise as DTE is a publicly traded for-profit corporation. Substandard response in a crisis is probably due to preserving the bottom line. Paying employees overtime is an expense capitalists try to avoid. Do you remember in 2021, Brian began, this big winter storm hit Texas and a bunch of people died. It was the worst winter storm they'd ever had. The grid had been neglected in favor of corporate profits enjoyed by the Texas energy moguls. The grid failed, people died. I'm scared of that happening here. Brian continued exposing the profit motive of the corporation. DTE is sending 15% of every one of your bills straight to Wall Street, straight to shareholders. And more of it is spent on executive salaries, more of it is spent on advertising, even though they have a monopoly, and a bunch of it is spent on lobbying against climate-positive legislation as far away as California. At the time of this writing, November 20th, 2025, one share of DTE stock was worth $135. Meanwhile, a growing number of Michigan residents are unable to pay their electric bills. The risk is rising due to a recent halt in LIHEAP, Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, funding. LIHEAP normally helps more than 400,000 Michigan households cover utility costs, and without it, many families have been pushed closer to disconnection. If the ballot initiative passes, Ann Arbor residents can expect fewer and shorter outages, eventually lower prices, and net zero emissions. The money collected from bills goes directly to keep the system up to date and pay the people doing the work to keep it running. How can people help with the ballot initiative, I asked. Brian replied, A2P2 is going to be collecting signatures to get on the ballot as early as January. And then there will be months of signature collection. And then it'll turn into a campaign to make sure everybody votes yes to create the Public Power Board. So people should go to the website and volunteer to help get rid of DTE. I offered Brian a challenge. Let's say that you're standing out in front of Meijer. You're standing out there and you're collecting signatures and you've got 5 seconds to say what you're about to somebody to get their signature. Go. Brian launches his pitch. Okay, so we want to get rid of DTE. We can generate our own electricity that is cheaper, more reliable, and with more renewable energy. So sign on today to make that happen. Connect more with Ann Arbor for Public Power by visiting their website, AnnArborPublicPower.org.
Pregnant residents and parents of newborns in Ypsilanti can apply for temporary unqualified basic income December 1st. Starting at 9 a.m., December 1st, 2025, pregnant residents of Ypsilanti and those with newborns born on or after December 1st can apply for RX Kids, rxkids.org, an unqualified basic income program. The program provides $1,500 during pregnancy and $500 per month for the first 6 to 12 months of a young newborn's life. Unqualified basic income is undeniably effective at increasing quality of life and addressing the immediate needs of those in poverty. Giving people basic income benefits entire communities far more than what it costs. The RX Kids program has been operating elsewhere in the state of Michigan, and evidence shows improvements for the entire communities, such as lower rates of postpartum depression and lower rates of eviction. New and or expecting parents who receive this income will lift the economy of Ipsy, both in the true measure of the purchasing power of the people and the more common false measure of how capital is being passed between wealthy parties. In its $81 billion 2025 budget, the state of Michigan granted $270 million to the program. The Senate Fiscal Analysis Agency estimates funding maximum payouts statewide would cost $750 million. Private funding is currently baked into the program. Quote, each community where RX Kids operates must contribute philanthropic money, unquote. Sneha Dandapani reported on her interview with co-director Luke Schaefer in Michigan Public. RX Kids, though brief and insufficient, is a limited implementation of a universal basic income, UBI. UBI is likely to play a major role in all our lives going forward. Giving people money is a direct salve to poverty. It is the most effective medicine for the symptom, though we dare not neglect the underlying disease. If we don't address the root cause of poverty, this and other UBI programs will continue to be underfunded public-private partnerships, become means-tested, be bound within layers of unnecessary hierarchy and bureaucracy, and eventually be eliminated. Many social safety nets have already suffered this fate, and the remainder are sliding down this pipeline. When the Black Panthers fed school children for free, they were shut down and replaced with the far inferior product of free and reduced school lunches, where people in poverty are forced to prove how poor they are before the state will let their kids eat. If we all agreed that everyone deserves to eat, there would be no crisis when the federal government cuts food funding. We would not worry if benefits are cut off because the children would be fed as a certainty, regardless of politicians and billionaires. Our need for social safety nets is increasing. Poverty is increasing. Our hamstrung social safety nets that require means testing with complex applications and Byzantine mazes of hoops to jump through on dysfunctional websites in the soul-sucking waiting rooms are not enough. UBI is giving people a life without demanding they earn it. It's as obvious and evident that UBI eliminates poverty as it is that abolishing rent solves homelessness. If you don't want people to be poor, pay them. If you don't want people to be homeless, let them have homes. UBI improves people's material conditions and enables people to survive the growing automation of work. However, the so-called philanthropists funding UBI research and the political system driving UBI policy are the root cause of poverty. Every Ypsilantian who gets this money is getting a fraction of what they're owed in stolen labor value and unjust rent. As someone who wants to see as much wealth redistributed into as many hands as possible for the sake of all our survival, I have a few concerns about the future of this project. Quote, RX Kids is a program of Michigan State Public Health Initiative in collaboration with Poverty Solutions at the University of Michigan and administered by GiveDirectly, unquote, from rxkids.org. My minor concern is that this is a research project. Researchers want data, the methodology of researchers creating a usable data set, and the methodology of social workers trying to deliver the maximum assistance to the maximum number of people are not the same. What is in the best interest of the people and what produces the most valuable data set are not always going to be the same. This contradiction in interest is something to keep an eye on. RX Kids' published data appears to be gathered at the community level with local statistics before and after the program is run compared to the communities that didn't get the income. There is risk of well-meaning scientists standing in the way of humanitarian support that people desperately need to improve their data set and other malpractices for the sake of publishing motive. The data, as you may expect, shows UBI creates a wealth of material benefits for communities from reduced poverty to healthier people. You can find the project's published papers on their website, rxkids.org/impact/research/rx-kids-publications. I cannot stress enough how beneficial it is to Ypsilanti for every eligible new parent and pregnant Ypsilantian to apply for this income on December 1st. My major concern is philanthropy capitalism. Billionaires do not have good intentions towards people. Reducing poverty is contrary to their agenda. Poverty exists as a result of their wealth extraction. Poverty is the void left by their thievery. Philanthropist billionaires who stole and sold your data, who extract billions from unpaid workers, underpaid workers, and unpaid workers, and those who continue to do so see UBI as a replacement for traditional social safety nets like SNAP and Social Security. They know UBI is a tool we need to survive in the automation paradigm they're creating, that they've dragged us all into, and they want control of it. They want to own it long enough to eliminate our existing social safety nets, then eliminate it. Similar to how Microsoft will embrace, extend, and extinguish social software standards, the wealthy embrace, undermine, and extinguish social safety nets. The easiest way for capitalist greed to corrupt social safety nets into profit extractors is with public-private partnerships. Public-private partnerships, from Section 8 housing to localized monopolies, bandage over fallout from the ever-widening wealth gap and exacerbate the root cause. Billionaires exist only because of labor value stolen from underpaid workers, and the property taxes in politicians' budgets are paid for with ever-ratcheting unjust rents. Of all the money missing from your paycheck and all the money you lose to the landlord, they're willing to give a tiny fraction back. It gives them clout at parties and makes them all richer in the long run. And there's mud in the pie, but it's not a mud pie. RX Kids is a research project feeding tech billionaires data they use to take more control over our social safety nets. RX Kids is a public-private partnership between the state and wealthy creators of poverty. But RX Kids will help people. The program already is helping people. I want to see it expanded, owned and led by the people, and I want to see it signed into law that forever going forward, Michigan will pay universal basic income to all newborns, not for 6 to 12 months, but for their entire lives. The billionaires can afford it, they owe it to us, and it's the state's most basic responsibility to seize their blood money and return it to us in full. We won't let them starve. We aren't them. In the meantime, if you are eligible, apply December 1st.
Sergeant Shannon continues to serve by filling veteran service gaps. By David Mitchell, ground cover writer and vendor number 661. Many Ann Arbor residents identify with the wonderful lyrics of the historic fight song for the University of Michigan and think of our community as the victors. Yes, we are the home of many great achievements and the home of many of the best schools, public safety, and social services available in the entire country. Despite all of the reasons for raising our fists and pounding our chests with pride, the question still remains, is our VA hospital failing our victors? Hidden beside all of the beauty, power, and pride that surrounds our country, Washtenaw is home of the Veterans Administration Hospital, the VA, serving over 70,000 veterans living in Southeast Michigan. One would think that in a world-class country and a world-class county, our veterans would receive world-class service. Unfortunately, this is not the case. Despite what seems to be overwhelming need, our VA hospital only has 102 acute care and inpatient beds. To add fuel to the fire, the VA healthcare system only offers a 40-bed community living center and a clinical building for outpatient diagnostic and surgical services. This paints a dark picture of our country and our county. The unacceptable low amount of resources that are made available for the country's brave men and women who have devoted and dedicated their lives for this great country fall far beneath our nation's mission, vision, and promise. Now, in every dark painting, now in every dark painting, there shines a light, and this light is found in the life, love, and lessons taught by Sergeant Stephanie J. Shannon of the United States Army. Sergeant Shannon served and continues to serve this country with great honor, character, commitment, and sacrifice. As the founder of Michigan Women Veterans Empowerment, Sergeant Shannon is on the tip of the spear in the daily battle against homelessness, food insecurity, and the abandonment of our youth. Sergeant Shannon's mission is to identify, connect, educate, advocate, support, and empower all military veterans, service members, their families, and the youth in and around, Sergeant Shannon is on the tip of the spear in the daily battle against homelessness, food insecurity, and the abandonment of our youth. Sergeant Shannon's mission is to identify, connect, educate, advocate, support, and empower all military veterans, service members, their families, and the youth in this great country. As a true visionary leader, Sergeant Shannon knows what needs to be done and leads from her heart. One more time. As a true visionary leader, Sergeant Shannon knows what needs to be done and leads from her heart as she is led by the Spirit of Almighty God to achieve what might seem impossible. This battle-hardened, wounded warrior has returned to civilian life with her. This battle-hardened, wounded warrior has returned to civilian life with her boots on the ground. Sergeant Shannon is a proud graduate of Grand Valley State University with a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology. With the powerful combination of her battlefield training and her creative brain power, Sergeant Shannon deploys her knowledge of proven strategic tactics to address the major problems facing our country today. Sergeant Shannon's program is just one of a number of groundbreaking initiatives that have made Sergeant Shannon a sought-after keynote speaker for organizations and institutions throughout Washtenaw County and across the United States. Her message is clear. Let's not just talk about the problems, but let's do something about them at the same time. No matter who you are, or where you are, or where you're from, or where you live in this country, as long as there is breath in your body and blood flowing through your veins, it's never too late to get into the fight. I encourage you to join the fight by partnering with Sergeant Shannon and sharing your time and energy to stand side by side with a warrior who works hard. I encourage you to join the fight by partnering with Sergeant Shannon and sharing your time and energy to stand side by side with a warrior whose words work. Sergeant Shannon is a published author of 2 books, and she is working on the third as a part of a national book tour in 2026. You can find out more about joining the fight against veteran homelessness by raising your right hand and signing up to serve as a volunteer with this great organization that makes a daily difference in the lives of people, including young people from all walks of life. We're influenced each day by news reports of our government shutting down and the very services that built this great country. Now, you have the opportunity to stand up and share your voice in support of the issues and programs that are being taken away by our current leadership in Washington, D.C. If you are tired of sitting back and watching the dismantling of our jobs, services, and possibly our very freedom as Americans, join Sergeant Shannon and speak out and fight the good fight of faith. You can find Sergeant Shannon via her website, empoweringwomenveterans.com. Again, empoweringwomenveterans.com, and schedule a personal consultation to learn how you can join in the fight against veteran homelessness through activities like an honor guard and drill team. Sergeant Shannon leads our youth with great honor and discipline. Through her great sacrifice, Sergeant Shannon serves on the front lines of youth leadership development, and through her great sacrifice, Sergeant Shannon serves on the front lines of youth development in our country, county, and our nation. You might think that you are too old to be a part of this solution, but you are never too old to join the fight. Even if that means rolling up your sleeves and writing a hefty check in support of the great work being done on the front lines by Sergeant Channon. Your donation to this world-class nonprofit organization will literally change and sustain lives during a time in which the wounded warriors are often pushed by the wayside and shunned. You can join Sergeant Channon as she speaks out against many of the key issues that plague our community, our country, and our entire country. Sharing her battle-tested reflections from the heart of a wounded warrior. Your generous donations will allow you to stand shoulder to shoulder with Sergeant Channon. In addition to your financial support, you may also choose to join by serving as a volunteer. I invite you to join forces with Sergeant Stephanie Channon to become a part of this unbeatable team. Contact Sergeant Channon today and donate your time to bring to an end veteran homelessness while helping to develop our young people who are the future leaders of the world.
This is a poem by LaShawn Courtright. When the snow falls, chills of wonder spread all over me. I mean, the idea of sliding down a hill on my sled, a ride on my ATV, snowboard, or my snowmobile, maybe even build a snow woman or a snowman that looks and dresses like me, or have a snowball battle with my frenemies. When the snow falls, I want to get out my snowblower so I can move the snow over from in front of my garage and house entry and exit doors. I've got to clear the sidewalks too, so that my children can make it to the bus stop for school. When the snow falls, it's cool to just look out of my window and watch it come down, at whatever rate it may fall. When the snow falls, a warm snuggle will definitely do. Most of all, when the snow falls, I just want to be with you.
The title of this article is November is National Diabetes Awareness Month by Will Shakespeare, Grand Cover, News, Vendor Number 258. Before 1982, Diabetes Awareness Month had been broadcast and promoted in the month of October. However, in 1982, President Ronald Reagan designated November as a National Diabetes Awareness Month. Diabetes is a serious medical issue, and about 34.8 million Americans are currently diagnosed with it. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, and the National Institute for Health, NIH, have reported that one out of three Americans are at risk of developing diabetes. They also reported that about 33% of American teenagers have the risk of being diagnosed as pre-diabetic. What is pre-diabetes? According to the National Institute of Health website, Pre-diabetes is a precursor before the diagnosis of diabetes mellitus. Adults with pre-diabetes often show no signs or symptoms of diabetes, but will have blood sugar levels higher than normal. The normal blood glucose level is between 70 mg-dl to 99 mg-dl. In patients with pre-diabetes, you can expect to see blood glucose levels elevated between 110 mg-dl to 125 mg-dl. We do want to focus on the definition and explanations for diabetes 1 and 2. According to the NIH and CDC, type 1 diabetes is a chronically progressive autoimmune disease that affects approximately 1% of the population in the developed world. This adverse immune response is induced and promoted by the interaction of both genetic and environmental factors. In contrast, type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance coupled with reduced insulin output, is the primary cause of hyperglycemia. Hyperglycemia is spelled HYPERGLYCAEMIA, and it is affecting approximately 8.5% of the adult population. What are CDC experts saying about prevalence and prevention of diabetes? For prevalence, in the United States, 15.8% of adults have diabetes. 11.3% diagnosed, and 4.5% undiagnosed. About 1 in 3 American adults, 97.6 million, have prediabetes. Prevalence increases with age among men more than women and among those who are overweight or have a family history of the disease. Prevalence is higher among certain racial and ethnic groups, such as American Indian and Alaska Native adults. That's about 13.6%. Non-Hispanic Black adults, about 12.1%. And Hispanic adults, about 11.7%. On the question of prevention, type 2 diabetes can often be prevented or delayed through lifestyle changes. Losing even a small amount of weight, if you are overweight, can make a significant difference. Focus on whole grains, fruits, and vegetables. Limiting sugar, sweetened beverages is also beneficial. Aim for regular physical activity. The causes of type 1 diabetes are not fully understood, and there is currently no known way to prevent it. A Stanford University pediatrician, Alok Patel, recently appeared on ABC News program which discussed the challenge of diabetes during the Diabetes National Month of Awareness. He noted that 4.8 million Americans are currently suffering from diabetes, and every year 1.2 million Americans are diagnosed with diabetes. He also suggested solutions for combating the issues of diabetes this holiday season. His prescriptions include being careful about our nutrition and to keep moving. See the attached link. So, links between obesity and diabetes. There have been a lot of concerns about childhood obesity linking to type 2 diabetes. We would like to share the CDC and NIH reports on that topic. The prevalence of diabetes increases as a person's BMI goes up. That's 30 equals obese, making obesity a significant risk factor. Obesity is the leading cause of type 2 diabetes, contributing to nearly 60% of cases. Obesity can lead to a condition called insulin resistance. High levels of free fatty acids, often found in people with obesity, can negatively affect the insulin-producing beta cells in the pancreas. The CDC and NIH emphasize that lifestyle changes, such as losing weight and increasing physical activity, can prevent or delay the onset of type 2 diabetes. Research and public health efforts. What are the research and public health efforts? The CDC identifies obesity as a key modifiable risk factor for type 2 diabetes and promotes healthy eating and physical activity to reduce risk. The NIH conducts extensive research into the relationship between obesity and diabetes, including studies on the underlying physiology, the development of new treatments, and the impact of weight loss on related conditions like fatty liver disease. The National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases has a specific office dedicated to obesity research. If you have a BMI of 25 or higher, especially with other risk factors like family history of diabetes, it is recommended to talk to a healthcare provider about diabetes screening. Weight management through healthy eating and physical activity is a crucial step in reducing the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And the subtitle, Local Expert Weighs In. I talked to retired University of Michigan medical doctor and research scientist, Dr. Mad Max. He is one of the volunteers at Grand Cover News, along with his wife, Mary. We did an interview at the Grand Cover News office on November 20, 2025. W.S. William Shakespeare asked, what do you think about November as the National Diabetes Awareness Month. Dr. Max answered, "Seasonal differences are of no use. Making it seasonal is not a value to the population in terms of diabetes. Secondly, the value of awareness of the two types of diabetes is vastly different. Why? Awareness of type 1 is a medical condition for which family history is most important. Awareness of type 2 diabetes has social and economic value to the population because of the importance of obesity to its cause. William Shakespeare asked, what is the definition of diabetes? Dr. Marx answered, type 1 is a disease of insufficient production of the hormone insulin, which enables sugar to be metabolized. It's really glucose. However, people can refer to it as sugar. Type 2 is the block of the effect of insulin to metabolize sugar. The point is that there are two different diseases, and one is specifically treated with insulin with prediction of success of the treatment. Type 2 scores is not sufficiently known for a treatment to be predictably successful. The discovery of the hormone insulin and its use in treatment of a younger person with insulin deficiency, type 1, was successful. That is, it saved his life. That has become the basis of life-saving treatment of type 1 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes cannot now be prevented. The emphasis now on research is to obtain the treatment which could prevent type 1 diabetes. In type 1 now, the treatment will be insulin. The goals of research is to obtain treatment which could prevent type 1 diabetes, to prevent failure of the pancreas gland to produce insulin. William Shakespeare asks, as we celebrate the national holidays in November, December, and January, what should we do to prevent any form of diabetes? Dr. Max replied, focus on whether one has type 1 or type 2 diabetes. Limit the intake of calories to prevent weight gain. Limit what you eat. Watch the calories you eat so that you do not gain weight. The health team from WRAL News talked to Harvard experts about the best way to avoid type 2 diabetes. Harvard doctors said, type 2 diabetes can be avoided by eating better. This expert advice was published by WRAL News of Raleigh, North Carolina, on March 1, 2016. The doctors also said what our local expert, Dr. Mad Max, proclaimed. Many people are at risk of type 2 diabetes, but they might not know it. Prudent medical advice is to watch diets and eat better. the doctors recommended some foods and drinks to avoid in order to minimize the risk of type 2 diabetes. Our readers who want to see the specific recommendations should Google Harvard experts, subtitle, to avoid type 2 diabetes, watch diets. It is important for our readers to know that there is a close link between diabetes and cardiovascular diseases, such as heart problems. Experts from the scientific journal Seconds Count, offer the following viewpoints. In quote, the relationship between diabetes and cardiovascular disease, CVD, is clear. But the causes are complex. High blood glucose levels don't fully explain the relationship between diabetes and cardiovascular disease, CVD. People with diabetes also tend to have low-level inflammation of the lining of the arteries, which can interfere with proper function of the blood vessels and make them more susceptible to developing atherosclerotic plaque, where cholesterol and other substances build up in the arteries, limiting the flow of blood to the heart. The experts continue. With diabetes, there's also a greater tendency for blood cells to clump together to form clots with the blood vessels. A blood clot that blocks the arteries supplying blood to the heart causes a heart attack, while a blood clot that blocks an artery supplying blood to the brain causes a stroke. Furthermore, the research work of U of M sociology alumni and distinguished public health professor Dr. David Williams of Harvard has shown how social factors like stress, racism, and socioeconomic status contribute to diabetes and heart disease. Happy holidays. Celebrate wisely. Thank you. Thank you very much.
My forever reason, Monique Caldwell, ground cover contributor. You are special to me in ways that light cannot measure. You make me happy like the sunrise, soft gold spilling across the horizon, reminding me that each day begins with hope. You steady me like roots beneath the earth, holding me firm when storms rage loud. You are laughter that dances through silence, a melody that turns ordinary hours into joy. You are comfort like a blanket in winter, wrapping me in warmth when the world feels cold. You are the reason I believe in love's resilience, the proof that devotion can be both gentle and strong. You are the spark that makes my heart glow, the reminder that love is not fleeting, but chosen. Because I love you, I see beauty in places I once overlooked. I find courage in moments I thought I'd falter, and carry gratitude for every breath we share. You are my sunrise, my anchor, my forever reason why, the one who makes life not just bearable, but breathtaking.